This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Today we're going to look at what it takes to be a world best with a big announcement this week that Melbourne will host the world's top 50 restaurant awards next year. We've got a bit of news from there. We've also introducing you today to a wonderful French fellow by the name of Gonchon Cherrier. He is a pastry cook. He is utterly charming. I'll introduce you to him as well. And we revisit a discussion we had with Massimo Bottura because he is, of course, now the new world number one. This is Cravings here on Joy 94.9. Good afternoon. It's 6.5 minutes past one. It is the day of the Game of Rhones happening at the meat market in North Melbourne. If you are at all interested in Rhone wines, you should be there. Perhaps that's why you're not listening. Hello, my name is Pete Dillon. This is Cravings, and it is Melbourne's favourite food and wine show. This week, the announcement was made that Melbourne would host, amongst other announcements, that Melbourne will be hosting the top 50 restaurant awards next year for the world. Yes, for the world. The movers and shakers of the Australian culinary scene turned their attention to Melbourne this week when the world's 50 best award recipients were announced. Attica, our good friend Ben Shuri at Attica and Rip and Lee, was named the best restaurant in the Australasian region and also reappeared among the world's top 50 list. He dropped one spot from 32 to 33, but in a time of great movement, it's not a surprise at all, and we congratulate Ben. Here's a bit of what Ben had to say previously about Melbourne being part of a world-class food scene.
As an outsider, before I moved here, I always heard that Melbourne was the food city in Australia. That was like the understanding back home amongst chefs and people. Sydney had good food, but Melbourne was like the place, really, the serious place on food. Attica couldn't be anywhere else but Victoria. I discovered the produce was actually pretty different, and I remember like writing letters back to my mentors in New Zealand describing the food and describing the ingredients and just totally infatuated with it and just blown away by it. I think the diners here are incredibly astute. I feel like we have some of the highest quality customers in the world. It might sound like a funny thing to say, but really, you know, your success in a restaurant is dictated by your customers and how they feel about what you're doing. One thing's for sure is that the customers understand quality. They understand quality ingredients because they cook with them in their homes, so you can't ever pull the wool over their eyes. When I did something new, it wasn't pushed back on by the city, you know, it was embraced because they had open mind. And I think that was something that other people, other friends from around the world were envious of. We often take it for granted the fact that we do have so many vineyards here in the state. It's just something I think I take for granted without even thinking about it. I mean, many other countries don't have any wine in their land at all. So for us, it's just kind of an abundance. While we have great high-end restaurants, we also have amazing mid-range restaurants. We also have people doing fantastic sandwiches, you know, souvlakis and hamburgers. We have cheesemakers with little shops. We have amazing bakers. We have all these different things, and that's to me what makes it the place to be in Australia for food.
Yes, a fascinating insight from Ben Shuri about what it means to be in Melbourne and our food our food culture. And so I want to go back to the story. European restaurants are no stranger to the world's 50 best, but we have been slowly making our mark on the international scene. So the release of the world's 50 best means that there is also the announcement of the 51 to 100 best. And Bray made an incredible jump this year from 87 down to 65. But not all good news for Australia. Sydney's Quay dropped a whopping 40 places down to 98 this year. And last year's winner of the one to watch, Sepia, the Sydney restaurant Sepia, has actually completely been omitted from the list altogether. So Melbourne has been appointed the host of next year's as the next year's host city for the awards. That means that more restaurants in our region will get a look in for the top 100 spots, and we expect to see movement in those numbers at the top. For a restaurant to make it onto the list, it needs to have been voted for by members of the 1,000-strong Academy of Judges. That's quite crazy. And so we need to talk about that, because for the first time ever, an Italian restaurant has been named as the number one restaurant in the top 50. That honour goes to a man that we've met before, and we're going to reintroduce you to that man today. His name is Massimo Bottura, and his restaurant is called Osteria di Francescana in Modena in Italy. His restaurant is now the number one in the world. He's a delightful man, and when we do play that interview, we'll remind you of when we met him not so long ago. The other person I want to introduce you to today is a fellow by the name of Gontran Cherrier. Just today, he's opening his own boulangerie in Smith Street in Fitzroy. Collingwood. It is a beautiful boulangerie. It's a place where you can go and have some coffee and some breakfast and some beautiful, beautiful sweets using some Australian ingredients within the stuff that he produces. I'm going to introduce you to Gontran today. He is a delightful young man, a fourth-generation baker, and a man who is as charming as they come. So we'll get to all of that in just a moment. A reminder that we will be replaying the interview with Massimo Bottura, and I think he gets a bit sweary in it. But before we do that, we sort of really need to give a bit of a hint of what's going on around town. This is Cravings here on Joy 94.9. It's 12 minutes past one, and you are with me, Pete Dillon, and I'm looking forward to spending the next hour with you.
Hi, I'm Manny Fellel, and you are with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Yes, you are with me, Pete Dillon, and we're going to have a bit of a walk down memory lane. We're talking about, early in this program, the top 50 restaurants in the world. There has been a change. It's been dominated by Spain. It's been dominated by Denmark over the last, 6 or 7 years. That all changed this week when an Italian restaurant, Osteria di Francescana in Modena, owned by one Massimo Bottura. I want to remind you of who Massimo is, and here's a chat that we shared a little while ago right here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. He is a poet in the kitchen and an artist on the plate. His restaurant, Osteria Francescana in Modena in Italy, number 3 restaurant in the world. He has been blessed with 3 Michelin stars, and he's blessed with a creativity and artistic ability that has catapulted him to one of the most loved chefs in the world. His name is Massimo Bottura, and buongiorno, Massimo.
Buongiorno, Pietro. Buongiorno, buongiorno a tutti. E devo cantare una piccola cosa.
I want to start this discussion with those people that have influenced you, because reading your book, That Never Trust a Skinny Italian Chef, a beautiful book, one of the most glorious books that will sit on my shelf, you talk about the influences of people like Lydia, that there was a huge change in your life when Alain Ducasse walked into your life, when Ferran Adrià stopped at your restaurant, when you worked with René Redzepi. The influences of all these people, how have they influenced what you do?
They influence a lot. Left something, some scrap in my soul. Because if I think about Lydia, she was like a almost blind old woman who knocked at the door of Campazzo. 1 week later, I just bought this small, tiny trattoria in the middle of nothing.
Now, this was
it was in the beginning, 1986, when I drop my studies as a lawyer, and I decided to walk into the food world.
Because of your brother, Paolo.
My brother, Paolo, founded this little trattoria, and you know, to switch with this. It's a strange, crazy story behind that. But the point was, like, Paolo and my mom, they were pushing me because they saw me that I wasn't happy at all to what I was doing, to push me to follow one of my passion. One of my passion was like the food world, and so Lydia knocked at the door of, at Campazzo, say, "Oh, permesso, can I come in?" And you know, I said, "Hi, you need something?" "Oh no, you, I know you change, you know, the things, and you just walk into the restaurant, and so if you need someone, you have I have 35 years of experience. And I'm out of work because of my problem with my eyes. But, you know, I know how to manage a restaurant and a kitchen." I said, "Listen, stop talking. Put the apron on. Go in the kitchen. Show me what you can do." And she never left.
And that's been 30 years? Now,
29 years.
29 years.
And Lydia, still now, she is the one. I keep her as a referent for young stagiaires. They come to Modena to learn the most crazy technique. I send them to learn how to roll pasta by hand. That's a very important point. Before painting in abstract, you have to know how to draw like Raffaello, like Picasso was saying. Ducasse was the quintessence of obsession.
Mm-hmm.
Obsession about ingredients, obsession about quality. He was like at that time he was kind of avant-gardist because he was like introducing the olive oil in the French cuisine. You know, he was doing this cuisine du marché, means from the market to the plate. You know, he was very, very interesting, guy. And I was really, really dying to work with him. And at the end of the meal he had in Campazzo, he walked into the kitchen and said, "Okay, you want to come to Monte Carlo with me? I'm going to put you on Louis XV and see what you can do." I said, "Absolutely yes." 3 months later, I was in the kitchen in Louis XV when, you know, everyone was there because he had just that restaurant.
Mm.
And I was up at 4 or 5 in the morning how to bake the perfect bread, or to make the perfect croissant, and running when Bernard the chocolatier will start working with his chocolate and his magic hands. You know, those are experiences that are going to stay with you forever. But the most important part was the moment in which I was just saying hi to Ducasse in the Hotel de Paris, in the hall of the Hotel de Paris. And he asked me some question, and one of them was, "So did you take notes? Are you okay?" I said, "Fantastic chef. It was amazing. I have the whole book full of notes." And he looked at the notes, he crashed them, and he threw it in the garbage, looking at me and saying, "You're ready to stand up on your feet, walk." I was like ready to kill him. I just wanna kill him. And then I left, and I was so, that was so aggressive but that moment changed my life.
Mm.
In that moment, with that thing, that he gave confidence to myself, and saying, "You have a great palate, you know the technique, just go back and put everything black on white."
Mm-hmm.
Then I went to New York, you know, I met my wife, you know, it's like, you know, everything was just perfect because 1 year later I opened Osteria Francescana, 1995. And 5 years later, I was, you know, there was this eco coming from the Spain. There was this incredible chef who was changing and experimenting and things. And this chef came to Modena. and eat Osteria
Francescana. Almost by accident, because you had struggled for those 5 years, hadn't you? You'd almost sold everything that you...
No, that was 1 year later.
Right.
That was like, yeah, we were struggling that period, you know, because we were trying to, we were doing like provocative things and we were experimenting.
And the Italians don't like you to experiment with
absolutely
their traditions.
Not. Make sure you don't do one thing.
Yes.
Make sure. You go in Italy, have fun, whatever, but don't screw up with the grandmother recipe. That's a very important point. And so I was like, I was really having fun and struggling another time. But Ferran came and they said, come with me to Roses, to El Bulli.
Yep.
And, you know, it's going to be a very interesting experience for you. So I went. And I went there because of all this technique. Of course, I redefine all this foam, this idea. But the most important thing, the most important lessons that I brought back from El Bulli was freedom. Express yourself with freedom. Free, be free to serve in a 3-star Michelin restaurant a sardine or a Parmigiano Reggiano crust. It's all about emotion.
Mm. And it all comes from the heart. I've had the pleasure of talking to people like Alex Atala, David Chang, Rene Redzepi. I know that you worked with Rene.
Yeah, we were there together.
Yeah.
We were there together. Like we were like buddies because we were spending time in the kitchen and outside the kitchen. We were living 24 hours together.
Mm.
And, you know, the only time we had free was like 20 minutes after in a break between lunch and dinner, and we were falling asleep under the tree because it was just insane.
Brutal.
Yeah.
So let's fast forward to now. People talk about your ability to put a piece of art on the plate. I know that you're very influenced by art. I know that you and Lydia are collectors of art. How do you transfer that that is on a canvas to making it something on a plate that I want to eat?
It's about culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, the future, it's about that. The future, it's about culture. That's why I push the younger chef to study more, to go deep into things, to read more. Because culture is the motivational force to build your future. It's like...
My own culture, or do I absorb others?
I absorb others. Read. You know, you have to travel with your eyes and your ear open to get influenced, to get contaminated in a wise way, not in a wild way. Mm. You never have to lose who you are and where you come from, because you have to express yourself after. But culture is becoming... Think about Ai Weiwei. Ai Weiwei is a...
Who's a Chinese artist.
Fantastic Chinese artist. One of my favorite.
Mm.
And what he's doing? He's dropping a vase, 2,000 years old, and he crashed this vase into the floor. And he's then saying, I'm not defying my past. I'm rebuilding my past from the ashes of my past. You know, with my contemporary mind is exactly what we are doing in Osteria Francescana. That's why I got that piece. And it's in the entrance of Osteria Francescana, there's a jar with the ashes of a 2,000 years old vase there. And when they ask me, what is your cuisine? My cuisine is very simple. You open the jar, you get a little bit of this powder that is the ashes of my grandmother, the grandmother of my grandmother, the grandmother of my grandmother. Mm. Those ashes spread into a contemporary mind. This is my cuisine.
Mm.
Is I'm looking at the past in a critic way, not in a nostalgic way, to bring the best from the past into the future. This is very simple. But if you go deep into this simple thing, you know, you see everything. The whole world is opening, especially for a cuisine like Italian cuisine that is known all over the world.
Mm.
Most of the time is degenerated, and you don't see the things. Yesterday night, I had an incredible meal, you know, and all these Melbourne chef, Bay chef, they were cooking for me and reinterpreted my brain.
Right.
You know, incredible plate. Fuck off spaghetti bolognese. You know, this there's no spaghetti bolognese in Italy. It's the degenerate recipe because spaghetti I'm from south, bolognese sauce is from north. And usually you serve tagliatelle, so handmade noodle rolled by hand with the sauce, the ragu that is the bolognese sauce. Mm-hmm. So that's the point.
Yes.
You know, a chef from Melbourne knows that there is no, doesn't exist spaghetti bolognese. Mm. And it was, for me, it was fantastic.
We could talk for hours and hours. I have one more question before you have to go, because I'm so limited in time. What if we were to have a crystal ball and look at the future, where does it take us on the next part of your journey?
I'm focusing now, and this is another artist that influenced me on this. It's called Joseph Beuys, and art as social justice, culture as a social justice. We should never stop planting. We are the revolution. It's focusing on each one of us. I'm focusing on waste. Mm-hmm. 1.3 billion of tons of food is waste every year. Next year is going to be the Universal Expo in Milan. Mm-hmm. And the title will be Feed the Planet. So it's very conceptual. But no one understood that kind of concepts. Mm. So what I did, I knock at the door of the church and saying, I have a plan. I want to bring all the best chef in the world to Milan to cook the waste of the other pavilion. We want to re-give life to something that is going to be almost dead. They asked me to come back 1 week later. So maybe they had a meeting, you know. And they said, it's a fantastic idea. We're going to do it. So they put me. They show me a 1930 theater that was dismissed, dead, in a suburbs of Milan, the poorest place in Milan, in Quartiere Greco, in the Greek quarter. And, you know, I said, this is perfect. We're going to do it here. As soon as the seeds they were planted, you know, these architects from Milan with Renzo Piano, the Politecnico, they said, we're going to help you. We're going to rebuild the old theater. Mm-hmm. The artists, they arrived to me and they said, we going to make a fresco in a Renaissance refectory and everything for free. And, you know, the designer, you know, Milan is the city of design.
Yes.
And it's like Piero Lissoni, Fabio Novembre, Patricio Urquiola, the old design a special table for the occasion. Unique to stay there. Mm. We're going to give, put together beauty, life, and ethic all together. And it's like every chef, it took 45 minutes for me to call all the best chef in the world
and
say,
they're all coming.
They're all coming.
Massimo Bottura, it's been a joy to meet you and have you here in the studio.
Thank you. I should say
a joy to meet you again, because we've done this before, but great to be able to talk to you.
Grazie Pietro. I'll see you.
Grazie, ciao.
Joy 94.9 has a huge range of programs available for podcast. In fact, Joy is one of the largest podcasting communities on community radio. If you haven't checked out our podcasting service, you're missing out. Visit joy.org.au, click on the podcast tab, and you'll find a list of Joy programs regularly sharing the best interviews, news, and reviews. There's tens of thousands of hours for you to enjoy, so check it out now, joy.org.au.
You are on Joy 94.9. It's 28 minutes to 2. My name is Pete Dillon. This is Cravings. We just heard from Massimo Bottura, a conversation that was done some time ago, but he has just been announced as the number one chef in the world at his restaurant in Italy. The first time an Italian has held that privilege. So we felt it necessary to replay it for you. In just a second, we're going to hear a little music. And when we return from that music, I'm going to introduce you to a fellow by the name of Gontran Cherrier. He's a bit of a sex symbol when it comes to pastry chefs. He's a fourth-generation baker and pastry cook. He's inspired by so much and so many, but it's well worth you hanging around for that chat. So a couple of, oh, well, certainly a bit of music. And I was trying to think what would fit today with Gontran Cherrier and also with Massimo Bottura. There is really only one way to go. It's Tina Turner. We're talking simply the best.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Oh, I do hope you're singing along to that in your car, Tina Turner, with Simply the Best, which fits our discussion today when we're talking Massimo Bottura being announced as the number one restaurant in the world at Osteria Francescana in Modena in Italy. Just yesterday, I caught up with a young man whose name is Gontran Cherrier. He is building an empire of pastry stores and boulangerie around the world. Very soon, you're going to get to meet him. You are here on Joy 94.9, where it's 22 minutes to 2.
Joy 94.9 in Melbourne, joy.org.au for the world.
Sitting in a boulangerie in the middle of Smith Street in Collingwood with a man who's recognised, respected and revered around the world as one of our finest pastry chefs. It's a joy to introduce you to Gontran Cherrier. Welcome.
Merci. Merci beaucoup.
It is a little noisy here, so you'll have to shout at me, I'm afraid. Tell us a little bit about your history. You write about, or you talk about, always growing up with the smell of an oven or bread in the oven. How did that come about, and sort of how have you got from being a child with that thought or that smell to now where you have these sorts of venues around the world?
Yeah, in fact, I'm fourth generation of baker. And my parents, I spent time in my parents' bakery and my grandparents' bakeries, and I keep in my mind the flavor from the oven and the viennoiserie and bread baked in the oven of my parents and grandparents. And in fact, I spent all days of my life in a bakery, because when I went to holidays and so, it's a grandparents' bakeries, and I start to learn pastries, and after pastries I learn bakery, how to make bread and croissant, and I'm completely falling in love about croissant, and because I like the texture of flour, the flavor of flour, different type of flour, and how to use sourdough and natural yeast and so on. And I prefer, you know, have a good bread with a spread butter on top than a cake, you know.
Yes.
And that's the reason why I try to stay concentrated with the croissant and viennoiserie and bread. Just close the door, maybe, for you.
So getting to this point, how are you now here with your boulangerie in Smith Street in Collingwood? You're on the other side of the world. The weather's a bit crap. You were here for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. Is that what sort of made you realise that Melbourne is a city full of people who love food?
Yes, in fact, I had chance to come here for the first time. It's before Food and Wine Festival, it was for the Tasting Australia to Adelaide. Nice place too. And I spent two times here in Melbourne with Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. And I met many chefs, many bakers, and falling in love about Melbourne and the foodies and so on, because you have many offers. It's a melting pot, you know, with Greek, Asian people, and the combination is really, really interesting. And the quality of bakers here, it's year after year, it's completely increased, and the competition here is really very interesting. And your country, in fact, your country is very nice.
Yes, we like to think so. So the food here, we do consider ourselves Australia's best food city. Sydney will try and tell you that they do better, but we'll keep fighting that good fight. What is it about Melbourne? You said you saw Adelaide. Did you not want to open a store in Adelaide?
Why not? in Melbourne, this district, this place in Smith Street in Collingwood is, for me, it's completely, it's a real chance, in fact, to find this place, because around the area is very, it's completely my mind about how to make bakeries and, you know, the combination with foodies, the culture. You have a Copacabana place and so on. You know, it's really interesting because I can explain something. I can propose different types of food, and it's a world touch here, and that's very interesting for me. And the people lives here. They want to discover maybe some few things, and they want to change maybe every day, and it's a perfect place.
Do you have a hero? You talked about being a fourth generation baker. When you were studying your craft and becoming an artisan, who was the inspiration for you? Was it your father, your grandfather?
Of course, I have based from them. But they are more traditional than me. And I spent time in a few restaurants, and that inspired me a lot. And I spent time to Alain Passard, chef, and Alain Sandrin, chef too. And when I spent time there, I learned how to use different kind of quality of product and so. And in bakery, you haven't time ready to stay focused on you know, because we need to have to make a lot of bread and so. And that inspired me a lot. And my mentor, my inspiration, it's more than it's not really a baker or chef, or it's my uncle, in fact, because he is an artist. And he has inspired me a lot.
So when you've worked for those chefs, you've almost, in a sense, become a celebrity pastry chef. And I know that term probably doesn't sit very well with you, but there is a constant desire in our world to look to Heston Blumenthal or Gordon Ramsay or Alain Ducasse. You know, there is a generation of now celebrity chefs. Are you a celebrity pastry chef?
I don't know, but I try to make my try to make my my job in different with different types with different way in different way. TV show, write books, some consulting and so. And because for me, it's, I try to catch some inspiration in each part of each job. And I have a TV show in Paris, and we walk around France, and we go to visit different places in France, different bakeries and so. And it's maybe, yes, some people speak about me.
Yeah. I spoke to a female friend of mine the other day, and I said that I was going to hopefully catch up with you, and she's like, oh my God, he is the sex symbol of pastry chefs. How does that all sit with you? I mean, you have a craft, you're an artist when it comes to flour and bread and butter. How does the moniker or the idea that you are a celebrity or a sex symbol will sit with you?
Sure. it's a difficult question.
It is a difficult question.
Yeah. I don't know exactly, but I like handcraft and I think the handcraft is sexy.
That I think you're absolutely right. Gontran Cherrier is my guest. He has just opened the Gontran Cherrier Artisan Boulangerie in Smith Street in Collingwood. You have also stores in Paris and in Singapore and Tokyo. How do you manage to keep control over each of them?
I spend time in each place, yep. And I have a few head bakers. And I ask them to turn in each place too, mm-hmm. as soon as possible, and often that is possible too. I import my French flour to control the quality of croissant and traditional baguettes, and I buy a French butter too in each shop, the same quality and the same brand.
Yep.
It's easier when you can control the quality of raw material. It's easier to spread.
How important is good butter?
Butter. Yeah.
How important is it? Isn't that like the most important thing? Good flour, good butter.
Yeah. It's the most important thing is a good flour and good butter, and to manage your good sourdough. And with the butter, it's important to have a quite, of course, taste. But it's important to have a easy to spread.
So with all of this travel and looking after your stores all now around the world, how do you stay grounded? How do you find your sense of place? If you're traveling so much, is it hard being away from home?
Yeah. I like traveling. I need that to keep and to get some inspiration, mm-hmm. and to explain to my team to pinch some inspiration in each parts of the world to add in our French special French product. Yep. We try to create some bridge between different cultures. Mm-hmm. And because I have a chance, because croissant and baguette, it's you can eat each day.
Well, yes, of course you can. So when you do take parts of other parts of the world, if you went to Turkey or if you went to China or you went to Rio de Janeiro, do you take a little bit of their local knowledge or the way they eat bread and bring it into what you do?
One thing is really important for me. It's street food, and because street food explain the compartments, and in street food you can find which flavor it's in each country, texture, and I spend time in the street, a lot of time in the street and in fresh markets, to find the good way.
Is there something that you most like to eat? If we were to go and look in the cabinet or look at your menu, what is the thing that Gontran Cherrier likes to eat more than anything else?
Sorry?
The thing that you like to eat the most? Your favorite thing?
Maybe rye and miso bread.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, rye and miso bread. One thing is really nice. It's rye and miso bread spread with yuzu butter, mm-hmm. and oyster.
This is something I have to try. And do you sell rye and yuzu bread in here?
Yeah.
Rye and miso bread and yuzu butter.
Yes, yuzu butter. I should find here, because in Paris I use fresh yuzu butter, mm-hmm. and. It's so nice, really so tasty, so nice. And when I came here for the first time, I taste a very small baby oyster. So crazy, so tasty, so crazy.
What's the hardest thing? So you have to try and fit into a cultural ideal in each place that you go to. What is the thing that is most difficult? Is it being away from home, or is it trying to make some new friends? It must be a very almost lonely existence.
I have a chance because to work around in a bakery, I need a lot of people, yeah. And I have a lot of people around me, and to find new friends is not so difficult because we share plates and we share foods, and that's easier.
So that's easy. What is difficult? What is the difficult thing about trying to build this empire, if you will? Is there a challenge that is different in each country?
You know, I like new challenge, and I need that. And for this time, with my business partner, we want to have many travels again. Mm-hmm. And we will stay focused in Asian part, yep. In Pacific one. And after that, just take some rest.
When you're not making bread or croissant or vinoiserie or any of this, what is it that you like to do? How do you switch off and go and have fun?
Only walk. Walk and run. That's outside. Alone, good. And you know, I like take my car and just go straight and just discover some places. And when I find small street, I won't always go in the small street because I think some things maybe just catch or that's not really nice, and I like that.
Good, good. Enjoy your time in Australia. Thank you for talking to us. And I'm now going to go and fill up a box and take a whole bunch of pastries away to enjoy them.
Thank you very much. And thank you for your coming. And I'm really happy and proud to be there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Well, that's me done, folks. It is almost 2 o'clock. Today, there is no escape pod. You won't be going travelling. You'll be having a gaming experience with Luke and the team from The Checkpoint. It's a fantastic show. It's been a really big week in gaming, so they've got 2 full hours of entertainment coming your way. Thanks again to Jake Smethurst for the news, to Alex for sitting on the front desk and being his wonderful self, and to Dean Beck for Word for Word. I'll be back next week with another episode of Cravings, no doubt talking about Terps and Tuckers somewhere across this fair city of ours, or indeed across the world. You've been listening to Cravings. My name is Pete Dillon, and thank you very much for your company. It's time now for Checkpoint.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.